afternoon and welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, August 3rd, 2009. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Well, can you believe it's August? I can hardly believe it's August. I wrote about this in my newsletter this morning that it is 8 months since the beginning of the year, and it just seems like yesterday. My kids are growing like weeds. They're losing teeth. All kinds of things are happening in my family and my business, and a lot of them are planned, and I'm so excited about that. And one of the things that I invest much of my time planning is to bring you some of the best guests, some of the most knowledgeable and expert authors that I can find who can help you grow your business. And today, of course, is no exception. I'm excited to have on my show today Dr. Rosalie Loeber, Ph.D. She is the author of Run Your Business Like a Fortune 100, Seven Principles for Boosting Profits. That sounds great. Who doesn't need to know that? Let me tell you some information about Dr. Loeber. She is the president of Loeber Associates, specializing in designing and implementing business practices to increase sustainable profitability for companies of all sizes. Her experience encompasses more than 20 years in senior management at Bloomberg Financial Markets and Media and Citibank, consulting for NASDAQ, Combustion Engineering, FDIC, and the New York Times and GE, among others. She's also a teacher at universities such as Cornell, Fairfield, Hofstra, and New York University. Welcome to Indie Business Radio, Dr. Loeber.
Thank you. Very glad to be here.
Dr. Loeber, tell us this. Your book says How to Run Your Business Like a Fortune 100. So let's get started by describing what a Fortune 100 is and why a small and indie business owner cares about that.
Okay. Well, the way I look at Fortune 100 is I use that as an acronym, really, for any business that people consider a large, successful corporation. So whether it's Fortune 100 or Fortune 500, it doesn't matter. It's just something that generally for most business owners, especially those who have chosen to run their own business and become a CEO on their own, that Fortune 100 usually connotates big, bureaucratic, slow, stuffy, corporate, and that's precisely why we chose this as the title of the book. And my major premise is don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. There are many excellent practices that these companies use and have developed over the years to get to where they are, to get to being as big as they are, to making as much money as they do. They've, for the most part, spent millions of dollars with their own staff, with consultants, to develop these processes. And the premise of the book is most small and mid-sized companies don't think these practices are for them because a lot of them are turned off by anything corporate, or they don't believe that they have the resources, which many people define as time or the money, to implement these practices themselves. So what my company... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay, Dr. Loeber. I'm intrigued by what you're saying. You're saying that small businesses... I mean, obviously, let's just assume we all want to be successful. Why do you think it is that small businesses, you're kind of describing almost sort of a turn-your-nose-up attitude at what examples a Fortune 100 business has to offer us? Why do you think that is?
Well, I can speak for myself as a prime example. I think many of us, especially those with the corporate experience, have had situations where we've tried to implement something, we've had a good idea, and it's either been turned down because we were at the wrong layer of the organization, or it took so long for the company to approve the idea because of either time, money, or politics that, for the most part, either it wasn't implemented or by the time it was, we already were no longer the possibility of being a first adopter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably a big part of it. It's just like a slow dinosaur for the most part.
Does Fortune 100 have anything to do with Fortune 500? I mean, did the same entity coin these terms?
Yeah, I mean, that's how I did it. I looked at Fortune 100 as anything that was considered to be big, successful, and probably bureaucratic.
Okay, good. So you're saying that even though it's big, bureaucratic, and there are some negative things, perhaps associated in the mind of a very small business owner with a Fortune 100, that there are things that we can learn, and we're going to talk about those today.
Absolutely. And what my book does is it strips the essence of what those best practices are, gets to the real core of them, simplifies and adapts them to small businesses. And what I found when I started consulting with smaller and medium-sized businesses is that they could take the best practices that the large corporations designed and do them faster, with little expense, and with no bureaucracy.
Oh, we love the sound of that, especially the little expense part.
And yes, absolutely.
Speaking of little expense, let's talk about this for a second. This is an anomalous economy, at least we certainly hope it is. It's very unusual right now. And so can you give us your view based on your work with the companies that you've worked with and teaching in your profession? What are some of the things that small business owners need generally to be doing differently in this economy so we can prepare ourselves to come out of it healthy, strong, and ready to take advantage of a stronger economy?
I'm glad you asked that question because I just wrote a blog on that a few weeks ago. Basically, I would say they don't have to operate any differently at all. It's the profits principles that we'll discuss, I would assume, in a little more detail later, which is what my book is about, that people just haven't been thinking about. And by not thinking and implementing the profits principles, it's disastrous for any business at any time. But previously, by not implementing them, it was not, the corrosive consequences weren't as obvious as quickly. It just slowly chipped away at people's businesses, and maybe they didn't notice as quickly. But I would say operate no differently. This is, you know, it's interesting with this economy because people should really take advantage of maybe some slow time in their business rather than becoming frantic like a lot of my clients have been feeling, and use the time to really look at their business, go through, and we'll go through the profits principles, but go through the different elements of these principles and begin to streamline and define and really take care of their businesses in a way that they might not have the chance to if business was faster. So I would say basically operate no differently.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of those principles that you share, and you have seven of them, and you go into great detail in your book, and of course there's no way that we can synthesize everything in the short time we have, but I appreciate that we're going to be able to go through a high-level overview of each one, and I love that you created an acronym that we can all use, and it's PROFITS. We can all remember that. So
right.
Let's do them one at a time. Let's start with what you say is so important on the front end, and that is the P. Tell us what the P stands for.
Okay, if I can just give a little bit of a beginning statement about them, maybe
sure.
A little caveat, that would help. First of all, the profits principles are seven principles that I've come up with, which are not rocket science. Somebody else might have come up with five. Somebody might have come up with ten. So there's nothing magical about my seven, except that they work for my clients. And I look at the principles as a checklist. It's not what I call a model. In my last part, in the second part of the book, I have profits tools.
Mm-hmm.
And so once people are able to create a context with the principles, which is a way of thinking about their business, then they can put them all together, and I have a business change reality model, which is my primary tool. But we can get to that afterwards. So I just want to make it very clear that there's nothing magical about the seven principles, that somebody else could say, well, you know, I would have added this one or I would have taken away that one.
Right.
Okay? It's more to think of your business in a holistic way that covers all the points.
I love that you said that. And, of course, we all know, would you agree, that the magic really happens when we roll up our sleeves and put some of these principles to work.
Absolutely. And it also has to do with people's personalities and what they're good at. So, for example, if somebody's a very analytic person, they may focus on that aspect of their business and forget some of the other important aspects.
Right.
So by having this profits checklist, if you will, these principles,
right,
it helps you think of all aspects of your business.
Great. Well, we're going to cover each one of those, and
yeah,
we're going to be talking with Dr. Rosalie Loeber, the author of Run Your Business Like a Fortune 100, Seven Principles for Boosting Profits. And I am going to make sure that we cover, at least in a high-level overview, everyone out there who's listening. We're going to cover each one of these. And I want to encourage you, if you're listening to the show, I'm so glad that you're here. If you're also with us on Saver Chat, I'm glad that you're here, too, because you can chat with each other, with me, and also you can chat your questions to our guests, Dr. Loeber. If you have questions about boosting profits as we're talking, please post them. I'll make sure that they get addressed on the show, and we'll be right back with Rosalie Loeber's Seven Principles for Boosting Profits. This is Indie Business Radio. Don't touch that mouse.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're here with my guest, Dr. Rosalie Loeber, the author of Run Your Business Like a Fortune 100, Seven Principles for Boosting Profits. And during our break, I let Dr. Loeber know that you guys are out there in the chat room chatting with us. And she said, Dr. Loeber, what's your comment about that?
That is great. I love to answer questions. So please, thank you for being on the show, and I definitely welcome your questions. It's really fun to answer some real, live people questions.
It is great, and one of our listeners here agrees with you, Dr. Loeber, about not panicking. She says downtime is great for tidying up loose ends that get looked over during the busyness of the of business when things are moving along more quickly. So let's talk about P, position only for growth, you say. Tell us about that.
Position only for growth is when what I'm saying is that you assess your market, you look at your internal possibilities, and the only time you change a strategy is if it's for growth. And if you're for profit, because I know there are some people probably who are nonprofits on the phone, only what's going to make you profitable. No changing direction for any other reason, because what that does is it's going to have you lose focus.
Well, let's talk about that, because changing, I'll use myself as an example without getting too specific. I have made some changes in my business from time to time, and I have planned for them to be profitable, and they haven't. So are you saying that we should try to avoid those mistakes, but they sometimes happen?
I don't know that anybody can avoid mistakes. I think that's why we're entrepreneurs. We love risk. But when it comes to positioning for growth, I would not make any changes. What happens typically is somebody sees an interesting project or they're offered an interesting project, especially in an economy like this. You say, hey, you know, we could do that. What have we got to lose? Okay? What I'm saying is if it doesn't position you in the market for growth based on some of the other things I'm going to say about the other principles, then it doesn't make sense to do that because you're going to dilute your strategy.
So this means that for small business owners, I mean, we're typically so creative and we love jumping on new opportunities. So you're saying that we need to have some discipline.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the biggest shortcomings of small business entrepreneurs is that we, and I'll talk about myself as you're speaking about yourself, I think because we're bright and because we're always thinking, we do have lots of new ideas. And it is a discipline issue. I like the way that you use that word, discipline. I think it is a discipline issue. And being that we're generally, you know, small and we might not have every functional department that a larger company might have, when we change focus and we get off track, everybody gets off track with us in our company. And that can lead to inefficiency. So I would say the P, position only for growth, kind of leads the pack. You want to make sure you're assessing the market. You want to know if there are disruptive technologies along the way. You want to know what your customers want. You want to know what the buzz is in other industries besides your own. And then you want to look at what's going on inside your own company.
Right.
To see if you have those capabilities. In the book, I give the example of Melanie, who is a real person, but I've changed the name of her company. We're calling it in the book Environmental Inc. And she had a great opportunity to expand overseas. Looked very lucrative, but when she looked at her company and she looked at her market and her customers, she said, you know what? There's a lot of business in the U.S. that I'm not tapping into. And the capability of my people are marketing to U.S. markets. They're using the chemicals that we can easily get from our suppliers in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
Really didn't make sense for her to look overseas at that time.
Right.
And so had she gone overseas and expanded, who's to say? She might have done very well, but when we assessed her situation, she had so much to gain and so many untapped profitable markets in the United States that for right now, at least, she's foregoing that opportunity.
Good. Good. Not to say that it won't happen again. So that's
no, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Excellent example of someone who did that. So, and you say the next important thing to think about is reality.
Right. Now, reality might sound like, oh, yeah, we all know that. You know, what's the big deal about that? But what I do in the book is I try to take it a little deeper. When I talk about facing critical issues, I'm really talking about looking at your own assumptions, challenging your own perceptions and assumptions about reality. So, for example, you might look down and you say, boy, this is a lousy economy. It's because of the economy that I'm not able to sell my product. And what I'm saying is, why don't you challenge that? Is that an excuse? I'm not saying the economy isn't bad, but as you said, somebody else said in the chat room, what's going on in my company now that I can look at, maybe clean up, maybe streamline, and maybe think through a little deeper than I've had the time to do in the past? You know, it's difficult to put into practice because your own perceptions and your own assumptions really help you to decide what you want to do. And sometimes when it's hard and you have to make those hard choices, it's not comfortable. So the reality principle truly helps you sharpen your focus on what's happening today.
You know, let's talk about that a little bit more, too, Dr. Loeber. I'd like to inspect what you're saying, because we all receive, I know I certainly do, emails, phone calls, you know, Twitter direct messages all the time from people who say, you know, I'm really trying to make my business a success. I think it's the economy that must be flattening my sales, slowing things down. And, of course, I don't know because I don't know their business. But when you say challenge that reality, give me an example, if you would, of what we can as small business owners do to try and challenge that. What are some of the things we can do to say, how do we know whether it's the economy or not, or how much of it can we attribute to that?
Well, one of the things that I do with my clients, more so lately, I'd say, because of the economy, is really look at what drove you to start your business to begin with. And when I say start your business, I'm not just speaking to entrepreneurs of small company. I'm speaking to division heads, the intrapreneurs of larger companies where you actually run your own business even though you might be in a big company. So, you know, I'm speaking to anybody who has a lot of responsibility for their business. And what I say is, what is it that excited you to begin with? Why did you start this? Why did you want this responsibility? And then, are you still committed to this? You know, what I mean, another way to say, what's your vision? What's your purpose? Is this still something that is important to you? Is this still something that turns you on? And if it is, then I'd say, okay, what are you doing to deal with the uncertainty? What are you going to do to keep yourself going? what are some of the things you're telling yourself about the economy, about your customers, about other competitors? What are you telling yourself? And then look at each one of those statements and look at whether or not they're really true or not. You know,
but the thing that you said that a long, long time ago when I was involved in a different stage in my business, this was even before this particular business, I remember things kind of flattened out and I became very discouraged. The economy, of course, was booming at the time, so it didn't occur to me that that's what it was, but I couldn't figure it out. And one day, Dr. Lober, my mother said to me, you know, you just don't seem to be all that excited about what you're doing anymore. Do you really like what you're doing anymore? And so is that an example of, I mean, light bulbs went off in my head and I thought, oh yeah, my zeal is gone. I'm not excited about this anymore. Is that sometimes what happens to small business owners? We're on a roll, we're so excited, and then the work part of it, you know, sort of comes in and it's not as exciting so much anymore.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's a really great point. I think that's true. And I think if you are still excited about it, then what can you do to deal with the uncertainty of what you're feeling?
Okay.
You know, whether or not you think it's the economy, whether or not you think it's, you know, the client base, or you have a competitor that's stealing, you know, market share. It's like I help people come up with strategies to help them deal with the uncertainty, which I think makes us all anxious. You know, we don't know. We don't know if the business is going to go well. We don't know if we're going to be able to pay our bills. We don't know if we're keeping our customers. We don't know if there's, you know, a competitor around the corner who's going to steal our business. These are real, you know.
So what are some strategies? When you say come up with strategies,
mm-hmm.
you mean, for example, again, for small business owners, most of the time, and our listeners, you know, we don't have, like, a huge budget to go out and hire people. So
mm-hmm.
when you talk about strategies, you mean like maybe come up with a new online marketing plan, maybe start a local something that would promote what you're doing or share your passion? What do you mean by strategies to address the reality of the market and make it work for you instead of against you?
Well, I think the suggestions you just came up with are great. I think anything that's going to calm you down and keep you focused and keep you committed is a good strategy.
Okay.
I think another good strategy is letting go of things in your business that don't turn you on, letting go of some of those things that are draining your energy. So, for example, I'm working with somebody now who is a florist, and her great capability is marketing and sales. Yes, she's spending a good part of her time throughout the year planting actually planting in her greenhouse, getting things ready, when she's really turned on to the marketing, the sales, the online business, which is exciting for her.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So what we've talked about is, you know what? Why can't you let go of growing the plants?
Right.
And
right.
So 3 years ago, we actually had this conversation, and now this is something she outsources. She's found a grower. She's let go of that whole process. She has one greenhouse now instead of 10. She loves her business. She went from a $1 million company to a $4 million company in less than 3 years.
Those are some critical things there. You said she went from 10 greenhouses to how many?
To one.
She went from 10 greenhouses to one, and at the same time went from $1 million to $4 million.
Absolutely. And the key strategy there, which might sound a little counterintuitive to us business people, is she let go. She let go of very critical parts of her business that she didn't want to do. And the lesson there, and it's interesting, I'm going to be doing a podcast at the end of the month on this business. It's called TerraPlants. The key there was the letting go, finding a strategic partner, and not thinking that in order to have her business, she had to do all these different parts. That's absolutely not true.
Right.
You could still be a successful business owner, and now she's much more successful than she was before doing the things you want to do and finding strategic partners to do the things you don't want to do.
Excellent. I love that example. So everyone who's listening can take something away from that. Thank you for sharing that. So let's move to the O, which you say stands for obtaining vital information.
Correct. And one of the things I want to say is, although I've tried to make these mutually exclusive, you can see that there's some overlap. And the overlap generally is know your market, know your customers, and know yourself. Now, when we talk about obtaining vital information, that reminds us that although we need to be informed about our own business and our own industry, many times we have too much data. In fact, it's so much easier to get information about our own business and industry that many times people think that they actually have all the information they need about their customers just because they have such vast quantities of information. And that's not really true, because unless the data is digested, all right, it's not particularly useful. And that's a big problem now that we have with the Internet. There's so much, and not just the Internet, but most of the information most people I know get is from the Internet, from social networking. There's so much great information out there. But unless we go below the surface of what it is, it's not going to be something that we can use, because if we get that information so quickly, so can everybody else.
Right, right. So when you talk about this kind of information, the vital information, you're sharing in part a serious commitment to sifting through some of this stuff.
Yeah, and I think it's the main thing is, what is it that you're looking for?
Okay.
I know I myself have gotten into the habit before, I can't say I do this all the time, that mm-hmm. would be true, but before I get on the Internet to research something, I say, okay, what is it that I'm really looking for? And if I really am serious in a time crunch, I'll actually write down my question.
Okay.
And stay focused on that. Because what we all are really looking for is, what is the information that's going to help us with our own customers?
Right.
What is it that we can provide? What is it that's going to be new and different and exciting for our customers? And we also need to learn more about our own industry and our own business, so we won't be able to provide those things. But that's a given. I mean, that's sort of like your homework, your preparation. Like when you speak somewhere, it's understood that you're going to prepare.
Right.
So that's a given. And what we really want to do when we look for information is find out about our customers. And sometimes the best information is not what we do with research on the Internet or in reading the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually talking to our customers, getting inside their organizations, networking with people who know our customers, and being a little more creative in terms of what it is about our customers' lifestyle, not just their interest in our product, but what about other products and services that they use and are interested in.
Right.
You know, just to get the full picture of who our customer is.
Well,
and then to be able to communicate that throughout our companies.
So important to get that full picture. And you also say that we need to be flexible. What do you mean by that?
Flexibility, let me give you an example. That might be a good one for an example. I have a client who is a large home good chain, okay? So this is a corporate example. And what they found was, because of, you know, the last several years, well, not several, but maybe 3 or 4 years, you know, the home do-it-yourselfer market has decreased,
mm-hmm.
okay? Mainly because not as many people are buying homes. People are spending less on home projects if they can. And what they decided to do was, you know what, how can we be flexible? How can we shift gears without sacrificing our purpose and our mission?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that they decided to do was focus on the home contractors.
Okay.
Okay, because these were the people who were actually doing more business with.
Mm-hmm.
And they found this out through their various databases, and through some of the Internet and some of the reports that they were getting, that they were actually increasing their sales with the contractors. And so in terms of being flexible and shifting gears, even though their products might have been the same, they began to supply different quantities of those sizes
mm-hmm,
of
mm-hmm.
the products.
Okay.
And it was in the sizes that the contractors wanted, not the small containers that maybe a home buyer would want because they would only use them once.
Very good.
Yeah,
that's
so
really
but flexible.
So we can take what we have at our core and massage it a little bit to adjust to the economy or to adjust to whatever situation we find ourselves in. And as you just described an example of a company that made a change without really having to change that much.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, I know for my clients, and the reason I'm giving so many examples like this is that they're afraid they just have to either go into a new business or close their doors. And, you know, what I do with the best practices that I teach people is I say, no, you don't have to do that. We can, as you just said, Donna, massage what we already have, maybe shift focus, and make sure that we're positioning for growth. The other thing with flexibility, that gets into a lot of our own internal business practices.
And Dr. Lober, can we come back and talk more about flexibility after our break?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
I love what you said about shifting focus to position for growth and always looking for other alternatives outside of the, God forbid, closing your doors. I love
that.
We're talking with Dr. Rosalie Lober, author of Run Your Business Like a Fortune 100. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're here with my guest, Dr. Rosalie Lober, author of Run Your Business Like a Fortune 100, Seven Principles for Boosting Profits. And we are talking about principle number four, which is flexibility. And before we took our break, Dr. Lober said she was going to give us a little bit more information about that.
Okay, yes. In terms of when you look at your own business, when we talk about flexibility, especially for small and medium-sized business owners, many times we could make our processes more flexible so that if we want to change products, if we want to change our services, we can shift them more easily if we build flexibility into these processes. Now, one of the areas where you're at an advantage to a larger company is you do have more flexibility because you have less people, and many times your processes can be made flexible because of that. Not always, you know, depending on what it is you sell. Probably with a service you can be more flexible than with a product, but even with products you might be able to adapt and shift gears. I have a client who's a chemical company, and they have found that because of the way that they thought about purchasing their equipment, both financially and in terms of the hard, you know, the equipment itself, that they built in, when they were thinking about positioning for growth, how they would be able to purchase more flexible equipment with better financial terms, with the understanding, or the hope at least, that they would be growing and they would not be, you know, have too much capacity or too little capacity. This gets a little more involved when you try to think it through, but I just really suggest that you do that.
No, I actually think I love that you gave that as an example, the flexibility, because what you did was put some specifics around what you mean. And certainly I think all of us with technology can find probably any number of ways to make our processes more efficient, if you know, especially as they involve marketing and outreach, because we can use the Internet. So thank you for mentioning that, Dr. Lover. We do have a question from someone in the chat room. Ms. Esthetician says, do you think that companies may sometimes be so busy focusing on the professional side of their businesses that they don't focus as much as they should on the personal side. And I think if I may explain what I think she may be getting at is using the personality of the people behind the business and the people involved in the business to get the word more out about what they do, as opposed to just focusing on all the, you know, the bells and whistles and widgets that we sell.
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and actually I get to some of that in the flexibility chapter, so I don't know if you've already read the book or what, but one of the important things is as either the CEO or somebody in one of the senior management positions in your company is to be an effective change agent and to really focus on your ability to influence others and find out what is it, what is the culture. We hear that word a lot, but it's what's the culture of your company? And by culture, I mean, is it formal? This is just very general, but is it formal? Is it informal? Are people friendly? Do they share ideas easily? Is it kind of a flat organization where people in senior management are able to become very approachable to anybody in the organization? And based on that, and there's no right or wrong to that, it's just that once you know how your company operates, you can influence it in ways that work. So I think if, and is the person on the phone who's in the chat room, maybe they could clarify that a little more.
I'll certainly let you know, but I think that's great. Once you know how your company operates, you're in a position to influence the direction.
Yeah, and I think the way I'm interpreting what you meant by professional is the actual work versus the people who do the work.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, as I'm sure we all know, if we think about it, the work is the easy part.
Right.
It's the implementing, it's the communicating, that if that isn't effective, your company is going to fail. I don't care how great your technology is or how great your products are. It's making sure that the people in your company are effectively, that you're effectively influencing and articulating what it is that's important in the company and what the focus is and their ability to carry it out.
We're talking today with my guest, Dr. Rosalie Loeber, author of Run Your Business Like a Fortune 100, Seven Principles for Boosting Profits. And so far, we've covered four of those principles. P is for position only for growth. R is for reality, do some reality checks. O is for obtaining vital information. F is for flexibility, and Dr. Loeber says that I is for integration. Take us there, Dr. Loeber.
Okay. Integration is making sure that every element in your business is interconnected. It's linking all aspects of your business. So let me ask you, and this is something you can just think about. Do you notice any parts of your business that do not belong with the rest?
Good
question. Is there anything just sticking out like a sore thumb, even though it might be something good?
That is such a good question, and I wonder how everyone would answer it. If you're listening to the show, feel free to tweet your answer. And I would have to say, honestly, there are a couple of things that stick out like a sore thumb, or there have been in the past. And I think what's happened is we have to get rid of them or massage them until they fit in. That's
exactly
it. So you're saying the integrated whole, more of a holistic picture of what your business looks like, because I think sometimes small business owners have things a little bit fragmented.
I think that's true, and I think that's it's the strength and the weakness of a smaller business. You know, integration creates a whole that makes all the parts bigger. You know, it adds a cohesiveness, it adds a consistency to your business. The work flows from one function to another seamlessly. So if you think about a circle, all right, if you have different parts kind of going out of the circle, you're going to have what I call energy leaks, all right? It's not going to flow seamlessly.
Mm-hmm.
Your business tells a wonderful story for your customer and your employees when everything fits together, including the measurements that you use for success, including the way that you and your employees communicate, including the way that you choose your projects. Let me give you another example. I love examples. Probably one of the most successful companies that I've worked with, of all things, they made baby strollers. and probably some of you would even know the name if you have children, because they're kind of the state-of-the-art strollers. And one of the things they do is they have weekly meetings with many different functions on the phone, because they're all over, they're regional, all over the country. They're national. They have regional meetings with all their regional people. And one of the most interesting things is they have great ideas. They want to branch out into, you know, all different kinds of products because they've had such success with the strollers.
Mm-hmm.
And the CEOs of the company, there are two of them, a man and a woman CEO, they are so adamant, and this company is 20 years old, they're so adamant about, no, we're just focusing on strollers. We can improve them. We could add features to them. But we're not veering from strollers. And they have such success, and what they're focusing on is streamlining their processes all the time, enhancing the way that they sell. They look at everybody in the company as a salesperson. And I guess what I'm getting to is that the depth that they have because of the singular focus and making sure that their marketing and their sales and their product development and their design work and their engineers all integrate into this one funnel, if you will, of baby strollers, creates a depth in the way that they operate that I have seen very rarely in any company, and they're wildly successful.
Okay, so if we can kind of boil that example down, which is a really good one, into just kind of repeating what you said and thinking this through in my mind, because that's very valuable. Depth, the depth of your business comes from a singular focus, even though there's a lot of moving parts.
And it's the integration. One of the metaphors that I give in my book is if you think about the toys that we had as kids, where we had those moving gears and all the gears were different sizes and different colors, but there was a little crankshaft at the edge. They were all on a square pegboard kind of thing. And when you turn the crank, all of those parts, even though they were different sizes and different colors, all move together when
Excellent.
We turn that crank.
Excellent visualization tool.
Yeah.
Way to think about it. So let's
yeah.
move on to the next one, which you say is test and revise.
Okay. Test and revise is just what it says it is. It's evaluate your current strategies. And one of the things that I have found is that sometimes, you know, we think about our strategy and we go, oh, great, this is a fabulous strategy, and we don't look at it again. And that's how we get what I call scope creep, where we get a little bit off kilter over and over again until we're very fragmented. Test and revise is a reminder that your business and also your market is constantly changing. So we always want to be alert and prepared to adapt quickly to survive. And we don't want to add projects that are tangential to our business strategy, which leads to patchwork of non-mission-critical projects. Because like I say over and over again, it just zaps your energy. Doesn't mean keep a strategy that doesn't work anymore, even if you've designed it a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it means make sure that you're constantly testing and reviewing and making sure that everything works together. So you're constantly looking at your goals. You're constantly making sure that your activities are related to what you want to achieve, that you're not just doing busy work, that you're not just taking on projects that are, as I said before, tangential.
Do you believe that small business owners need to formalize a milestone review process in order to implement what you're describing?
Absolutely. And when I get into the tools section of the book in part two, I talk about this not only in terms of the work, but in terms of the people processes. Who do we have? Do we have the right complement of skills in the company? What else do we need? So it's not just testing and revising the work strategy. It's testing and revising the people strategy that we have as well, which I haven't spoken that much about, but it's critical.
Well, and that's a big part of what I hear people who have employees say. It's like, you know, we need some help. We're going to hire some people, and you dot all the I's and cross the T's and get all your state paperwork filed, and then you have to really learn how to be a people person or a psychologist sometimes to actually hire the right people and move them in the right places.
It's hiring the right people for where your strategy is at any given time. So if your strategy changes, okay, you might need different pools of skills within your organization, your company.
Right.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that one person has to have all those skills. You could spread it out. What you want to have is a pool of skills within your company.
Right.
And so when you test and revise, that's an important piece to look at. Just constantly continue to review so that you don't lose your energy and efficiency. Which, when you asked earlier about, you know, the current economy, I'd say, although I think all of these are important, certainly the integration and the test and revise, I would say if those aren't in place, it's going to be really hard to, you know, make it through this economic difficulty.
Excellent. But then that's a good thing for us to take away, is to have those scheduled, pre-scheduled evaluation periods already in place so that we do it regularly. Excellent advice. And last but not least, Dr. Loeber, you say steering the company. Is that an umbrella thing, or is there something specific we need to get there to?
Yeah, there's something specific. I just want to add something to the test and revise, because you mentioned it twice about regular review processes. And in the book, Chapter 11 talks about what I call consultative dialogue, and that's where I talk about all kinds of review meetings that should be set up on a regular basis, but not just meeting to meet, a way to make these meaningful dialogues and make them quick. Okay, so steering the company, that's a good segue from what I just said. Because although you're responsible for your business, your success depends on the other people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's I kind of gave the spiel a few minutes ago about steering the company when I was talking about how people need to implement it. It's unlikely that you're going to be able to sustain profits for the long term if you don't have the right people and if the communication within the company is going well. So it's two things. It's having the right people for what it is that your purpose is, what it is you're creating, what it is that you're selling, and then it's making sure that the communication amongst the people in the company operates effectively. And, you know,
Tiffany Green in our chat room, she's listening to the show, she has a question for you. If you're just beginning to implement your profit strategy, what is your suggestion for which one to begin with, if any, over the others?
I think probably P, because you want to make sure you position correctly. But I would look at it as a circle where you can jump in at any time. There's plenty of work with each one of those letters, if you will, where, you know, sometimes people aren't ready to position for growth. They just feel that their company has, you know, they're not sure yet where they would go, so how could they position? Because they're not sure exactly what they have and what they want to keep. So I'd say position for growth ultimately leads the way, but you could start any place where you feel that your company needs the most work.
Okay,
and you don't even have to start where it needs the most. You can just hop in any place. But most people start where they're feeling the pain the most.
That's good. Position, yeah. Well, you know, and it's interesting to be able to give at least that kind of direction for very small businesses, Dr. Loeber, because oftentimes we're wearing not only most of the hats, but all of them. And so having your suggestion as a starting point is really valuable. Thank you for that question, Tiffany. So we have covered all seven of the boost profit strategies from Dr. Loeber's book, but of course, we can only touch the tip of the iceberg. We need to be able to know where we can go to get this book so we can learn more. Where should we do that?
You can certainly get the book on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
You can get it from Borders and Barnes & Noble. You can get it from Wiley, and most bookstores have the book, and you certainly can order it if they're out of it.
Where can we go online to learn more specifically about you and what you do?
Okay. One of the things you said initially when you said my company, I've actually changed the name of my company to Profits Principles. So you can find me at http://www.profits, with an S, principles, PRINCIPLES.com. I do a weekly blog, and in fact, I had two blogs a few weeks ago that focused specifically on this on the down economy. So I would suggest any of you who are concerned about that read up more about that on my blog. And it's the same website, but after .com, it's /blog.
Excellent. We'll definitely be sure to check that out. Thank you so much, Dr. Rosalie Lober, author of Run Your Business Like a Fortune 100, Seven Principles for Boosting Profits. Thank you so much for joining us today on Indie Business Radio. It's been great.
And thank you, all of you, for your time and your questions.
Excellent. We'll see you next time, everyone. I want you to know that I will be here next week on August 10th with Tara Hunt, author of The Woofy Factor. This is a fantastic book. It's all about using the power of social networks to build your business. And you know how much I love that and how powerful I think that is. So join us next week, 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern, right here at IndieBusinessRadio.com for Tara Hunt, author of The Woofy Factor. Until then, enjoy your life. Build your business and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.